a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And welcome to this week's edition of Utah Weekly Forum. I'm your host, Rebecca Kressman. And it's interesting that there's all kinds of radio in the world and all kinds of individuals that participate in radio. Some of us do it commercially, playing music and adding commercials. Others do it in the community for public safety. There's a lot of purposes to radio, shortwave radio, etc. We have found that there is a wonderful amateur radio club. It's the Cottonwood Heights Amateur Radio Club that is being led by Carlos Cardin and Krista Thompson. And I just thought how fantastic it would be to bring them both in. So, Carlos, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Now, I pronounce it Cardin, but would you like Cardon, or what's your preferred pronunciation?
Correct.
I had him at Cardin. Okay, great. And Krista, we're good with your pronunciation.
Yes.
Good. Carlos, you are the president and Krista the vice president of the club.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Tell me about the history of the Cottonwood Heights Amateur Radio Club.
So when Cottonwood Heights City was formed, there were several amateur radio operators who assisted the city in terms of being prepared for an emergency. And for a number of years, it was just a casual organization. They would get together and kind of work with the city. But in 2014, it was decided that we really needed to get more organized. And we wanted to get a license, an FCC license, for the group itself, and so we formed a club in 2014. And if you ever want to be elected to something, the key is to not go to the meeting where they hold the election.
So one day you're spending time with your family, so the next day you're president of the club.
Yeah, so the day after the election, I got a sheepish call from one of my friends, and he informed me that I had been elected. So I was happy to do that. And from that point, we began to seriously look at how do we carry out what is our mission with emergency communications, and how do we organize ourselves to most effectively carry it out?
All right. Those are big goals. So, Krista, how long have you been a part? Were you missing at that meeting when you were put forward as a vice president?
No, I was there. So I've been involved for about 4 or 5 years with the club. And just got elected the vice president a couple of years ago. So it's been...
What brought you to amateur radio?
The community service that we do, like emergency communications.
Why does that spoke to you? Do you have a role outside that in emergency management?
I do. I serve as a block captain for our neighborhood. So it works as a block captain / neighborhood watch. And then I also took it a little bit further into the ham radio because they were asking people if they would like to be licensed in ham radio. So I said, sure. Why not?
So, to me, this is so captivating because mm-hmm. Many communities, you know, and I've lived in my neighborhood for 20 years, we don't have a block captain.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have neighborhood alert. Even I did grow up in a neighborhood watch program, but that's not where I'm at. And
right.
The fact that you have these motivated individuals saying, let's create this, let's have people lead out on it like you, Krista,
mm-hmm.
and then what steps can we take?
Right.
So when you moved into how long have you lived in your neighborhood?
Many years.
Long enough that you knew these things were important.
Right, for sure. And I care about my neighbors. I care about the community. So I thought that it was it fit my goals.
What is the difference between an amateur radio club and ham radio operators, Carlos?
Well, the club itself is an organization of amateur radio operators. And so to get a license these days, you really just have to pass a test on theory and regulations. When I got it in many years ago in 1960, you also had to know Morse code. And that kept a lot of people from getting licensed because it's hard to learn Morse code, and particularly for the higher grade licenses to send and receive it at a high speed. So, but anyway, I've got involved in that as a junior high school student. And
you learned the Morse code when you were in junior high.
Yeah, and got licensed as a teenager, and that led me to an engineering career, as a matter of fact.
Isn't it interesting how one door, you know, you take follow your passion, and then a door opens, and the next thing you know, you're president of an amateur radio club. So in 1960s is when you started to, I don't want to say dabble in radio, you started to participate in radio.
Yeah. The my junior high school science teacher, Mr. Kaling, had a bunch of little kits of radio parts. And it turned out these were war surplus Morse code practice kits that they had used in the military. And each incoming class would be issued one of these kits. They'd build it up and see what it was like and learn to, you know, to deal with electronic components. But I got kind of hooked on it. And then at the end of the semester, you'd unsolder everything and make the kit up for the next group. But it got me interested. I was fascinated with electronic parts and what you could make out of them.
It's no wonder you went into engineering, because I've always looked for, when my kids were young, all kinds of activities that would be hands-on that helped stimulate their curiosity. And one time we bought one of these electric kits, and we never got, you know, stage one done. I mean, just hooking up little wires to the right place, and he would look at me and I'd say, I do work in radio, but I couldn't tell you electronically how all the fuses are working to make everything come together. So I love that it started in school. Somebody put that in your place. It led into an engineering career.
Right.
And so for those who've just joined us, again, we're talking to the president and vice president of the Cottonwood Heights Amateur Radio Club. The radio, can we just talk shop for just a bit and you guys fill in the blanks for me? Mm-hmm. So FM 100.3 and 103.5, the radio, FM, the Arrow, pardon me. We're on really big sticks. We broadcast hundreds and hundreds of miles from the border, basically, of Idaho, southbound, all the way to beyond Nephi and a little bit more in towards that Price area. I mean, there's a really big area. And you can look at the top of the mountains and see these big transmitters that are helping push these radio signals through. And so when radio stations that are big, like FM 100.3 and 103.5, we have to get licensed, right? Mm-hmm. And hold on to that license. Many things that we need to do to maintain the legality of that license. Sometimes, in fact, every quarter I'm in charge of reporting the things we do for our community, because this is a community license. So what are the things we talk about on air that help the community? How do we bring them in? But it's all the radio frequency that we use is quite powerful, as I mentioned, and it's on a certain band. Okay. Ours is on an FM band that has quite a bit of power. When we're talking about amateur radio clubs, especially looking at communities like Cottonwood Heights, when you got your license, did you have to say, we will be broadcasting on this signal, or how did that work on a specific channel?
So, or when radio began back in the early part of the 1900s, late 1800s and 1900s, there was no, just as there were no licenses for cars when they first came out, eventually there was a need for order and regulation. And so
Marconi had a role of that.
Yeah,
right?
Marconi didn't have to get a license from it.
He didn't.
But early in the 1900s, they began to issue licenses, I've kind of lost my train of thought here, but
we're talking about whether or not the club has to have a certain frequency that you broadcast on.
So, yes. When you're licensed, there are certain frequency bands that are allocated to amateur radio. So there are some that are just below the AM broadcast band and some that are just above. And then there are some that are above your FM band in the 100 megahertz region. We can broadcast at 144 to 150 and then even higher. So there's a wide range of frequencies, but But there's a worldwide coordinating body that allocates frequencies to various uses. And it's always under challenge as to who gets what frequencies and so on. And so we also try to do public service to maintain our licenses and our frequency allocations.
So how does the community in Cottonwood Heights know where to hear public safety information or community information from the Cottonwood Heights Amateur Radio Club?
So we don't make any public broadcasts. The kind of things that we do are gather data in an emergency situation and pass those to the group of responders, first responders, the incident command team that would be put together in a disaster. And so we're not broadcasting to the public. You folks are authorized to do that. We're not authorized to do that.
Okay.
We can only communicate with each other and pass information, which then we supply to our assistant police chief, who's the emergency response manager for the city. And then he has a team around him. So we would gather information from around our city and pass it to them, information both verbally, in pictures, and in data files.
That's a big responsibility, Krista.
It is.
Have you had that enacted? Has there been times in your tenure that you've provided that type of safety information or public safety information to law enforcement, et cetera?
In a drill situation, yes. We're constantly drilling, so we make sure that we're all ready to go if we are needed. Not in any actual emergency, thank goodness. Like, we haven't had to use it in an actual emergency. But if there was a need, like if there was flood or anything else like that, we would be activated because our team is so well organized that they do want our assistance.
And that makes sense to me. In particular, a lot of time they talk about, okay, in the event of a large earthquake, which knocks down cell towers, right? Mm-hmm. In an event that it interrupts the ability for people to travel safely back and forth, they say, okay, be prepared in your house, be prepared in your community. But the lack of information is so important. I can remember when the fires, I live in Spanish Fork, and it was just a year or two ago where the fires were coming over the mountains, right? And we were working so hard to try to figure out how do we get the information on what to each other, not necessarily using the major TV and radio stations to communicate back and forth. So
we've based our what we call our major event procedure on the fact that it's very likely in a major earthquake that we won't have phone or power or internet. And so we've developed procedures and equipment and operator training that would allow us to supply the information that the incident command team needs to get help to those that need it.
So you have your own chain. I'll use the term chain of command in that sense. How many members are there of the Cottonwood Heights Amateur Radio Club?
We have 30 who are active members.
That seems like a lot.
It is.
Krista.
Not enough.
It's actually not enough. Yeah.
Do you try? You hope to have enough to have a statistical representation of the size of your community, or how do you determine how much is enough?
Well, so we've got – the city is organized into 6 emergency response districts, we call them, and those are subdivided into emergency precincts, coincident with LDS stakes and wards because we get a lot of help and support from the LDS stakes and wards. But we also have help from the Catholic parish, St. Thomas More, the Unitarian Church on Highland, and some others are also involved. But determining the size of group we need is we're sort of sizing it on the task at hand. So we have an emergency operations center, and it turns out we need about 6 or 8 people to manage that emergency operations center. And then we've got people out in the districts and the precincts, and we probably need about a dozen of those. These are the radio operators. Now, that's not counting the block captains who would go out and check the status of the homes and pass that information up. And then we have a drone operator. We have people with what's called go boxes. These are little electronic equipment compartments. We've got radios in them, and you can take those out and set them up in a remote location where the police chief might want us to be giving him continuous information from. And then we have people just with handheld radios or radios in their car that can go, you know, can be directed to a certain location to report from there, either pictures and or voice reports. And those folks can move around pretty readily. But you add up all those things, and it turns out that you need about 25 to 30 people. And then if you're going to do this for a number of days,
right,
you can see how the numbers
back up.
So yeah, that you're doing shifts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Right.
That
exactly.
You can provide that.
And what if we can't all get there? That's the other thing. If there's a big event,
chances are it might happen people at work, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
It's extraordinary to think of the detail that is put into place, but it also is quite comforting to me because I can see the demographic in the city that I live in. Each part of the city has high density housing, single family homes. There's always a mix, mm-hmm, or a blend,
yeah,
and mixed economic as well.
Yeah.
And so we may have an apartment complex that, or a condo complex that has those who are seniors who may need assistance,
yeah,
evacuating the house. We have so you have, you know, those who are younger and maybe more able to lift and carry, and then you have a grouping of individuals who may need more. So the,
yeah,
needs of this blocked area is, mm-hmm, not the same.
Right.
Right? And so
that's
you
right
would need someone who knew
what
the needs were, who lived in that community, to say, but we have someone who's wheelchair bound,
mm-hmm,
who needs, or someone who's on a respirator who is now out of electricity, or whatever you,
mm-hmm,
would communicate.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So many years ago, Smith's Food Stores donated a large number of ribbons,
mm-hmm,
ribbons to us. What those ribbons are used for is there are four colors in a bundle, and we tried to get those to every home in the city, and we still are in the process of building more each year because they get lost or,
sure,
whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea is we're attempting to train all of the residents of the city that if a major emergency such as an earthquake hits, you should put out one of those ribbons.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that's most serious is red, and that means we've got a life-threatening emergency at this place. And yellow means we've got some injuries, but we can do okay. Green is what you think it would be. We're okay. And then black means we've lost someone at this location. So we're training the citizens to put out this either one of these ribbons that we've distributed, or a red towel, or whatever color they can. And then the block captains have about 8 or 10 homes each in their portfolio. So when it hits, their first thing is to make sure they're okay, and then check their blocks. And then they feed this information up. And so what we're gathering initially in a major event is the status of all the homes. And it's a spreadsheet that lists all the homes by number. Our city mapping folks, geographical information system specialist, has a map of the city, and she has assigned each home a 5-digit code. And so when we first get started, what we're sending by radio, by amateur radio data, is a 10-digit code and a color, RBGY. And that's the information that we're gathering in the very first.
So that cuts down on the amount of time to communicate the,
yes,
needs of those. So by,
yes,
using that coding system.
Yeah.
Right.
You have all that memorized, Krista.
Mm-hmm. I do.
That's a lot. I, you know, here's another naive question. For those who just joined us, this is Carlos Cardin. He's the president, and Krista Thompson, the vice president of the Cottonwood Heights Amateur Radio Club. And I failed to mention you've most recently been recognized with an award from the community. And tell me again what that award is, Krista.
So the award is, it is in our field day is what it's called. And so what that means is that we have achieved the top rank in the nation in our category. And what that is that we've gone in and made all these contacts with all these other people throughout the country and Canada, so throughout the U.S. and Canada, and also shown our skill in bringing in our additional points. So that would be operating on solar panel, operating, let's see, through the satellite, because we can bounce off the satellite.
Alternative ways to, yeah, to get the message across.
Yes. And then making as many contacts as possible in a different procedures, which would be CW, Morse code, just a bunch of different ways. Voice communication.
And you were recognized as top in the country.
Right.
That's quite extraordinary.
For our category.
Yeah, that's quite extraordinary.
You've
made Cottonwood Heights in Utah proud.
We work hard for it, and we're pleased to have done well.
So, Krista, this is the naive question I went to. So congratulations on your recognition, which is triggered our desire to bring you in, because we can learn so much from you. Are you networked with other amateur radio clubs across the Wasatch Front and through Utah?
Yes.
And if so, if people are looking to participate to be able to fill the void in the communities they're at, where do they begin to find out whether or not there's amateur radio clubs in their area? And what, you know, and you come from an emergency management background, so mm-hmm. it works great for him, you know, and all of us will have different skills.
Mm-hmm.
So where's the best way for us to help? How do we find that kind of information, Krista?
I would check with your city and see if they have an emergency communications club set up. Ours is the Amateur Radio Club of Cottonwood Heights. So
call your city office and say, hey, mm-hmm. do we have some type of a radio club that is integrated into the emergency response of the city?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they could search for our amateur radio club, mm-hmm. and we'd be happy to put them in touch with people that we know. But we work with a group in West Valley, a group in Sandy, a group in Draper, one in Salt Lake City. Those we work fairly directly with and mm-hmm. interchange information, let them know what we're doing, and they let us know what we kind of cross-pollinate ideas on how to carry out our joint mission.
Isn't that the best thing? In fact, as we've learned over the years and we've watched larger organizations, whether it be the government or whatever, sometimes we think it's interesting that technology and development can be so siloed in one area, mm-hmm. and this area over here sure needed that information. And it has to do with, you know, our safety. Very often we'd have one agency in the government that knew this, but this over here. And I know that it's a big goal, but our own country, the government has been working to try to integrate and learn and try to make sure that they're maximizing our public safety. We have just about 5 minutes left. I meant to give you a 10-minute and was so enraptured by what you were sharing, I didn't. So we have just about 4 minutes left. And for those who just joined us, it's Carlos Cardin and Krista Thompson with the Cottonwood Heights Amateur Radio Club. And so even though it has the word amateur, do not think that's diminutive. That actually just means they are not being paid like I am professionally, and you are dedicating and volunteering your time.
I think it may come from a Latin word meaning love, that we do things for the love of
I think you might be right. Yeah. There is some of that in that Latin root, isn't it? But as you move forward, and you said that in Cottonwood Heights in particular, you could use another, 25 volunteers?
Absolutely.
And age demographics?
Doesn't matter.
Bring them on. How would they reach you to say, hey, we're in that area, we would love to help you? What's the best way for them?
They can look on the Cottonwood Heights City website, and they'll mm-hmm. find a link to us.
Okay. Right. And do you meet regularly?
We meet in person once every 2 months, and those are training drills. But we're pretty much continuously pursuing technology or updating our procedures. You know, I mentioned that a major event is an earthquake, but there are also minor events, or we call them localized events. So maybe there's a flood. We are subject to floods from Cottonwood Creek.
Absolutely. And we've had multiple floods that all of a sudden something backs down and water is rushing mm-hmm. through the
so,
area.
So in that case, we assume there is phone and internet, but we still need radio to coordinate the groups. And then we use our cell phones and we send images via the internet. So we have a procedure for doing that, and so we're always trying to look at the technology and look at our procedures and train our people. We mentioned that who knows where anybody will be when it happens. Mm-hmm. And so every operator really has to be able to do any of the jobs that we have, of those various assignments. We want everybody trained to do any of those because we just don't know who will be available when we get called.
I was talking about the fires in Spanish Fork and you know, having come from a news training, my first thought was, how do I communicate the fact that Highway 6 is closed right now? It remains closed. We got the fire. And I remembered, you know what, the power of my phone, and was able to do FaceTime Lives and Facebook videos and post them up. And here I am now in Woodland Hills. This is what we're seeing here. And, it, you know, for quite a while, I kept thinking if I had a network of individuals, and I'm sure I know, and if I'm not mentioning the work that you've done for those who lived in Southern Utah County and you're involved in amateur radio clubs that were communicating back and forth, I apologize because I'm just not aware of it. But how extraordinary. The more powerful had I known who those people were, right? Where to find them, because
there are some very active groups in Utah County. Yeah. I know that.
And there's no doubt that they were communicating back and forth. It just, as a member of the community that was ignorant of the power, you have done a great job, both of you, educating and informing us of the power of having people on the ground who are in the community, who are then already, you've got drills in place. You have ways to reach those who are in charge of trying to bring that emergent care or utility issues, whatever it may be, a large scale or a small scale. Before I let you go, anything you wanted to share?
You mentioned demographic. There are youngsters as young as 7 or 8 years old who have amateur radio licenses. Mm-hmm. I talked to some young lady operators in their teen years over satellite. And so anybody can get a license. You just have to study the material and contact the Utah Amateur Radio Club, and you can find out how to arrange for testing to get a license. So it's available to anyone, and there are numerous things you can do with it. Shortwave, you can talk to. I've talked to the South Pole and all across the world. With shortwave, there are satellites. That's really a lot of fun.
I used to produce programs for shortwave radio that would go all across Africa in different parts.
Oh, my.
And it was just the you know, closing your eyes and imagine.
So there are all sorts of things that people pursue. And emergency services is a major one. And that's
so that's just one portion of it.
Just one portion. Important. A very important one.
Anything else before I let you go, Krista?
I think... ditto to what Carlos said.
Come join us, right?
Yes, please come join us. We have
a
lot of fun.
Yeah.
We do a lot of training, like he was mentioning. So everyone's welcome to come and train with us. We'd love to have you join our club or any other clubs we can get you in contact with if you're in a different area.
What a great experience it'd be for any service group of youth, too, to tap in, not just a scouting organization, anything, to learn from this. So I appreciate your service to our community in Cottonwood Heights. Carlos Cardin and Krista Thompson, the leadership of the Cottonwood Heights Amateur Radio Club. If you want to learn more information about them, you can go to the Cottonwood Heights City webpage. And or call the city directly and ask for the Amateur Radio Club and get some information. Let's get more volunteers and continue to take care of each other and have fun, as you mentioned, because radio is extraordinary. So Krista and Carlos, thank you for joining us on this week's edition
thank you for having us.
Of Utah Weekly Forum.